The HR Stories podcast is brought to you by the team at HR Stories. The team at HR Stories helps businesses, nonprofits, and HR practitioners better manage the employee experience, providing the tools, training, and resources needed to get HR right. For more information, check out our website at theteam@hrstories.com. Each week on the HR Stories podcast, HR and leadership experts John Tallheimer and Chuck Simikian dive into the stories that matter most to you, our listeners. We have found that there is a lesson in every story. And now our host, John Tallheimer and Chuck Simikian.
Welcome to the HR Stories podcast, where there is a lesson in every story, and have we got a doozy for you today.
Yeah, we got a great story today, Chuck. There's so much happening in the news, and you know, so for our longtime listeners, they know that we used to record Friday mornings. Now we're recording Tuesday night. And today I spent the whole day teaching a payroll law seminar for one of our clients, Chuck. And I will tell you, really fascinating. Lots of great questions people asking about, like, oh, how do I deal with this? And I had this situation with this supervisor. It was interesting. One of the ones, Chuck, questions was their work week was Saturday to Friday.
Yes.
And Sunday was a day off. And so we were talking about overtime. And they're like, well, what if they work Sunday? Do they get overtime for that Sunday? I'm like, well, they don't get overtime for that Sunday, but they would get overtime starting on Thursday. Because then you would get over the 40 hours, right? Assuming they are working an 8-hour work shift.
Yes.
Right. And it was fascinating because I worked for a company that had Tuesday to Monday was our week. But it was a theater. We were off on Mondays typically. So, you know, kind of plays out. And so I was just like, oh, wow, I never thought about a Saturday to Friday work week. But again, right, yeah. 7 consecutive days in a row, doesn't matter what that is. So.
Yeah. So. It's interesting that you're getting these questions in payroll class because the reason we're recording on Tuesday's evening is because Chuck stepped away from the world of full-time consulting back into a full-time job. I'm going to take one more run at the HR director chair, having a great time down here in the Florida Keys on the islands of Isle Mirada in the Florida Keys. But our resort, John, is Saturday through Friday.
Okay.
And it's funny. We just had this conversation today with a department head that has a traditional Monday through Friday schedule. But one of his employees likes to pick up banquet shifts on Saturday and Sunday. So he works a banquet on Saturday, Sunday, which would know, hey, that's a great idea. But then Monday, day 3, Tuesday, day 4, Wednesday, day 5. So now by the time Thursday and Friday come around, this employee is an hourly employee is on overtime.
Yeah.
Because and when you think about it, it's like, but I just picked up a shift on, no, guess what? And so wherever the overtime goes from 40 to 41, wherever you're working, and this person is making bank because their regular, like, full-time job Monday through Friday at an hourly rate is pretty high compared to their server.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, so it is crazy, quirky stuff about overtime, but that's the way it works.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and so again, right, and so and making those decisions as an owner, like, okay, what is our going to be our weekly schedule? Really, can be very strategic, and what's the plan, and how do we deal with that? I think we think a lot of times, well, office, we're Monday to Friday, so we're going to do Monday through Sunday, and that's the way we are. But you're working for a place that's 24/7. It's a resort, so it's going to be like, hey, what makes the most sense in terms of doing that over the long term? So it's kind of fascinating for sure. So,
John, you got any news today? Anything sticking out at you that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, the one thing that I read an article on HR Dive and they're talking about salary transparency, right? And so back in, I think it was 2021, Colorado passed a big law saying that anybody that's posting a job needs to post the salary and benefits for that job, right? So what's the range, all that kind of stuff, and it needs to be there. So any company that has one employee in that company, and that company could be remote, like there could be a remote employee, needs to post the dollar amount in there. And so the article is just basically saying that because they started it, other states have followed it. And so they're starting to look at how many of these things are there. And it starts wondering, where does that go, right? Where does that go in terms of if I'm applying for a job and I can see, oh, my salary would be this at this job, what, and this company is not doing it, how does that play out? And I think companies really, so let me look at the states. I just want to pull this up. Where was it? Now I'm not going to be able to find it in the article. But Colorado, then California, New York, Washington, and Washington, D.C. We're waiting for Virginia to do it. Connecticut, Maryland, Nevada, and Rhode Island also have some kind of transparency laws. A little different there that is in the interview process. And so I do think, how can we make that a strategic advantage? Right. Mm-hmm. Versus hiding it, how can we be like, hey, this is where we want to be. We're going to do it. This is going to be the benefit for you. And I think it's great for employees for sure. And we'll definitely want to talk about that on our employee podcast. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for companies across the United States. Like, am I going to do it? Am I not going to do it? How do I kind of play with that?
Yeah, I mean, right now on Indeed, you want to post a job on Indeed, most companies have to put the salary range, especially if you're recruiting in one of those states. And yeah, it's the wave of how things are going to be. So companies just need to adapt.
Yeah, and then they said that 75% of HR jobs listings still had a pay range posted, even in those zero salary transparency states that didn't have it, like had no rules and regulations, still 75%. So I think it depends on the industry, how competitive it is and all that kind of stuff. But I want to kind of follow that through to kind of go, okay, how are we going to do that? So definitely having those conversations with clients and trying to have like, well, what should you do and how you should do it? I mean, it's interesting as we go forward, because now if I'm posting your job, Chuck, right? If I'm posting your job, hey, this is the salary range. Guess what that means? Every single person in the organization will know what your range is. Now, most big companies have levels, right? Salary tiers. And so everyone knows, oh, they're in that salary tier. Oh, that this is where they make. Those tiers are pretty wide. And so it does sort of open it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see as things progress, where we go from there.
Yeah. What do you have? What stories do you have? What are you working on? What have you found out there?
Well, I would say that last year we talked about employee housing and Cedar Point. And where I am right now, we have employee housing. There's a resort on Captiva Island in Florida. They have employee housing, and Cedar Point had employee housing. And a lot of times when you have the employee housing, you know, a lot of times, oh, it's for the younger crowd, the college students coming in, that sort of thing. But more and more, and even here at my current resort, we have a number of people that are, well, older, they come from other countries. And they're willing to live in this dormitory style housing, saves them money. They save the money. They send it back home. They, you know, and so it works for them. Cedar Point had something like that, but they said, guess what? To stay in company housing, you had to be a certain age or younger. You had to be 30 years old or younger, no older than 30 years old. And they got sued for that. And it was an age discrimination lawsuit. It wasn't a very big settlement. It was $50,000. But, you know, they did have to open up the housing to people that were older than 30, and they changed that before this lawsuit, finalized. But I always thought that was interesting. We talked about it last year on one of our podcasts. I thought I would just follow back up with that.
I love that you're reconnecting, right? We're kind of finishing, hey, this is what the story said. Here's what we said. Here's how it ended up. And it's interesting because I remember that story because it was at Cedar Point, right? And talking about it and going, hey, well, why did they make that decision? And I think it was for good reasons. As I remember, it was they were trying to protect the young people that were working there, right? And so they were trying to reduce the amount of people, and people were uncomfortable and they were just trying to do that. But you have to be careful when we're making these decisions, right? Employment, talent management decisions, we have to be really careful that we're being consistent with the law. And so I think that's always kind of a reminder, like, oh yeah, are we doing this consistently with the law, or are we doing this for some kind of better effort? And so how do we do that there? So that
worked out great. And you still see age discrimination things out there. Just this past February, there's a Texas car dealership. They had to pay $145,000. That's a lot of cars, but still, they fired a long time employee after heart surgery. There was a, just this past month, there was a Louisiana manufacturing plant that, get this, they had to pay $105,000 because they fired a worker who wouldn't retire. Like, the person didn't want to retire. So basically, now, did they fire that person because they were older? There may be more to it, but guess what? And I know you often talk about documentation and follow through, and there could have been a million other reasons. But in the absence of any documentation, they went to, well, they fired me because I wouldn't retire. And there may be some truth to that, but I just am fascinated by how companies continue to fall into these situations.
Well, I mean, again, right, I think you're just kind of playing it out, and you're having an issue with an employee, and you want it, like, as a manager, I see this happen all the time, where managers like, well, I wanted to talk to them, and they weren't getting any better. So I was trying to do this under the radar, and I didn't want to have to get HR involved, blah, blah, blah. A situation comes up that's now a fireable offense. They fire them. The company's like, okay, we're going to fire them. But then there's no documentation.
Yeah.
And then the employee comes back and says, well, they did it because I was over 45 and they wanted to fire me because I was too old and they wanted somebody younger. And so-and-so said that once. And now if you don't, as employer, have any documentation, you got to be careful.
Yeah. So, and then it becomes a retaliation thing. And I know that's a big gist of our story today, but I was once talking to a director of engineering at a resort. And, the directors of engineering, they're the grizzled folks, right? They're just rough guys, usually guys and women, but I've seen rough people. And they just see world in a black and white. And he said once to me, he says, Chuck, can I suspend two of my employees for 2 weeks? I'm like, 2 weeks? He goes, yeah. He goes, they're complaining that I don't pay them enough. They're complaining they should be making more money. And he said, I'm going to suspend them for 2 weeks, let them see what it feels like not to have any money. And then they'll realize.
Oh, boy.
How good they have. And I'm like, are you serious? Where's the camera? Am I on the mic up here? Is this one of those what you would do TV shows? So I was just blown away by that. But we talk about retaliation, and I know we're going to be getting into our story here, but I read an article a couple of weeks ago about it was an employee that was older. And she was going to be offered a performance improvement plan, the opportunity to be demoted or be terminated, right? Three options. People were quitting, and there was some legit stuff there. And as there's so much more to the story, but as the employee, as this manager, this lady who was in her 60s, received, you know, said, look, you got to make a decision between these three things. She sends an email to the HR manager saying that she feels that all of this is based on age and age discrimination. So in the investigation, they pull people's text messages. People don't realize this, but they pull it. And one of her, and her manager sent a text to the director the next day that said, hey, the PIP performance plan is off the table. And we're either HR now has a new plan. Okay, the day after she complains to HR, her boss sends a text message to his boss saying, there's a new plan by HR, PIP is off the table. She's either going to take a demotion or be fired. The big boss gives a thumbs up. Okay. The court saw that thumbs up as an approval that that was okay. That, the thumbs up as retaliation because everything was so close to her complaining about age discrimination. These guys giving thumbs up. Yeah, we got a new plan. And company said, no, they didn't agree to this. They were just talking. But the court said, no, thumbs up meant agreement. So retaliation, and they ruled in favor of the employee. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it goes back to that documentation, right? How important documentation is in what we do. And, yeah. You know, I think the hardest thing for HR professionals, and we talk about this, I talked about it today, is making sure the managers understand why we're asking them to do things. Because a lot of times we're asking the documentation, look, I was a manager for a long time. And now I'm like, oh, I got to do what? Like sometimes I would do it, sometimes I wouldn't do it, but I didn't do it enough that would protect the organization. And so again, and then collecting that documentation is the other thing, right? Because a lot of times as managers, we just put it in our file cabinet, we just put it in our files and we don't think about it. And then we're not there or something happens and then HR doesn't have access to it. And so it's just documentation is critical, right? It's so critical to what we do.
So speaking of documentation.
Yeah. I want to hear this segue. I want to hear your segue. Come on, segue into this.
Let's get to our story. Let's document this historic moment when we take a quick break and we get to the other side. You can make a segue out of anything. It may not make sense, but we segue.
Ladies and gentlemen, the king of segues, Chuck Simikian.
Every day I'm segueing.
Okay. Well, look, here's what I want to talk about, Chuck. I want to talk, as you mentioned earlier, I want to talk about retaliation and what it means in the workplace.
I love it. Folks, you've been listening to the HR Stories podcast, where there's a lesson in every story. We'll see you on the other side of this quick, important message.
Hi, it's me, John, from the team at HR Stories. We are often asked, how do I get better at HR? The simple answer is by practicing it. But as with most things in life, it isn't that easy. We make the best HR decisions when we have the knowledge, the systems, and guidance in place. Chuck and I founded the team at HR Stories to help HR practitioners get HR right. We are passionate about giving you the tools to excel at your job. For more information about upcoming workshops, resources, and our latest blogs, check out our website at theteam@hrstories.com. Together, we are the team at HR Story.
We want to welcome you back to the HR Stories podcast, where there's a lesson in every story. Today's topic, retaliation in the workplace. John, why is this subject so important?
Well, you know, Chuck, according to the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, 58% of their claims are employers who retaliated against their employees for coming forward with a discrimination complaint.
Yeah. So what is retaliation?
Good question, right? And so according to the dictionary, I had to look it up, make sure. Retaliation means to return like for like, especially to get revenge or to repay in kind. Now, in the workplace, we have definitions both from the Department of Labor and the EEOC, but basically it's when the employer takes adverse action against an employee because they have engaged in protected activity.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've never actually looked up the definition of retaliation. And that's interesting. Returning like for like, especially to get revenge. So I mean, not that I like retaliation, but I've, you know, the actual definition, that's is always a way of defining something. So when I think of retaliation, for example, I guess if one employee who works with me complains to the Department of Labor about wage theft, I, as the employer, or let's say one of my supervisors, if we reduce their hours or threaten to reduce their hours or give them a toothbrush and tell them to sweep the entire warehouse.
Yes, that would be terrible retaliation in all counts. Yes. And so that would be retaliation, right? Because the employee had gone to talk to the EEOC and you've done something to retaliate for that action.
Yeah. And this can cost companies a lot of money, correct?
Yeah, right. And it also hurts the company's reputation, right? And so that increases turnover, lowers morale. It makes it harder to hire difficult people. It shows up on Glassdoor and other sites like that.
All right.
It becomes a bigger issue.
Yeah. So I can't wait to hear today's stories about retaliation in the workplace.
Yeah. And it actually takes, Chuck, 2 hours from my house, from my home city of Nashville, Tennessee, the music capital of the universe, in a small town that we call Henry, Tennessee. Henry, Tennessee, right? Wasn't that a song? There, the Tosh Farm Company runs a pork and grain company. It's a big operation, over 18,000 acres of land, 38,000 sows or pigs, and it employs more than 100 people.
That sounds like a pretty big operation.
No, it is, right? And but they're really proud of the work they do, and they're proud of working in the community and working, getting these things done. But unfortunately, even good companies get HR wrong. Mm-hmm. But this case, right, in this case, they added retaliation to what they were doing wrong. And so here's the story. So two employees who provided animal care to the farm's pig, right? So they were working in the veterinary services. They were concerned that they were not being paid correctly. So they contacted their employer, Tosh Farms, and said, hey, we don't think our pay's right. Well, they didn't get any response, or they must not have gotten the response they want, because then they reached out to the Department of Labor and had a conversation with them.
So it is easy enough for an employee to complain to the Department of Labor. It's just a quick form to complete. I tell people all the time, it's like your tax dollars at work. And you fill out this form, the DOL looks into it. And in fact, the Department of Labor and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission have increased their oversight of employers, both small and big. You know, I was listening to a webinar recently, and the EEOC and the DOL put this webinar together, and they said, the DOL solicitor said that they were committed, both the EEOC and the DOL, of a strategy together of intervening early and often and working together to handle situations as they arise.
Yeah, right. And so when we hear that, and we've talked about this in the questionable employment tax program, and right, so we know that the EEOC and Department of Labor are stronger together when they come in and do these investigations. In fact, in this story, Chuck, the Wage and Hour Division of the Department of Labor started to investigate, right? Okay. They started commencing their investigation, and suddenly the condition of the employees changed drastically. One of the employees was told to clean the office and bathrooms, as well as pick up the pig waste outside, all that outside their normal duties, right?
Yeah.
All those things outside their normal duties.
Sure. And, you know, that's the other duties as assigned clause, which, can sometimes be a a failure, shall we say.
Yeah. So what do you mean by that? That it's the failure of the other duties as assigned clause.
Well, I know you and I get this question all the time. Can I include other duties as assigned in the job description? And we also answer yes, but you have to be careful.
Yeah, because it doesn't mean that you can assign an employee them anything, right? You can't be like, hey, can you go get my dry cleaning or can you do this, right? It doesn't give us free rein to retaliate against our employees.
Yeah, especially if it's something so far out of their job description and like cleaning pig waste and normally you're doing, I don't know, accounting. And it's like, okay, it kind of looks like you're trying to get back at me now. But I'm curious what happened to these two employees.
Well, so they were forced, right, to sign a document forbidding them from speaking to other employees about their pay.
Ah, there we go. Protected concerted activity. And as we have often talked about on the podcast, you know, the NLRB Section 7, employees have the right to talk to their coworkers about pay.
Yeah, it's so true. And we should be paying attention to that. I think we've kind of nailed that in the podcast. We really talked about it. But if you don't, please reach out to us and ask us any questions you have about that. But here, Chuck, another employee even faced worse retaliation.
Okay, really? Really?
Right. When you think it can't get worse than cleaning up Pig West. So one of the employees was asked to meet with the management team and threatened with termination. When he returned to his workstation, there was a severed pig's head.
Like on his, like in his work area, on his desk, his chair.
Yes. Yes. Okay, can you believe it? Can you imagine? I mean, picture this for a second, Chuck.
Yeah.
You come into your workstation and there's this bloody severed pig's head on your desk.
Yeah. 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 Okay. That's great. That's fantastic. That's a little sick. I mean, I think about the movie The Godfather, the severed head in the bed, the guy getting out, blood everywhere. I mean, I can't imagine. You know, the other thing I'm thinking, not only is it sick, but like, who's cleaning that up off the desk? You know, I mean, there's just everything wrong about that.
Right, right, right. Everything wrong. And so the regional solicitor of Department of Labor, Tremel Howard, said, Tosh Pork's appalling actions and clear attempts to intimidate and retaliate against its employees will not be tolerated in their lawsuit. That's what he said in his lawsuit.
Yeah, and I'm with him. I'm with him on that. So do we know who put the pig's head there? Did that ever come out?
Does it matter?
I guess if it was in any individual acting on behalf of the organization, it would be retaliation. But if it was a prank, I don't know. I mean, yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, right? I mean, again, we don't know. There wasn't anything in the lawsuit that said the management team put it there. Okay. We don't know. Maybe a supervisor put it there, kind of retaliation. But what if it was just another coworker that maybe they play pranks like that all the time? It was just sort of like, ha ha, and it got caught up in that, right? And so again, this is an ongoing investigation. We'll see how the company and the department label handle or settle this situation. But that's not the end of the story.
Oh, okay. There's more?
Of course there's more. I can't give you that small story, not going to the big part, right? As you know from experience, when the Department of Labor comes into an organization, they don't just stop at the complaint. They want to make sure all the employees are safe. Everyone, either whether inside the country, outside the country, they want to make sure everyone is protected.
Yeah. Yeah. So that sounds like a visa issue, like an H-2A, H-2B, H-2A visa.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And so in this case, the company failed to provide to meet the employment required for an H-2A visa and didn't properly house the individuals who were on the permit.
Yeah, those visas, the Department of State and Department of Labor really have very, very specific requirements when you get approved to those. So it sounds like it just keeps adding up for these for the Tosh folks.
Yeah, it did. And it really did. Let me ask you something, Chuck. So as a director of HR for a large resort, how would you feel if your name was associated in a Department of Labor news release?
Yeah, that's, well, embarrassed, definitely. Upset, devastated, career ending. I mean, it definitely is not one to put on the resume, let's just say.
I was in the Department of Labor.
Yeah.
Hey, they say any publicity is good publicity, but so this is what's happening to the HR manager at Tashport, right? And so she and the company were sued to stop them from retaliating against their employees.
Yeah, and I know when you're training, John, you emphasize that HR people are the employer in the court's eyes, and we can be subject to fines and penalties, especially if we violate the law on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely, right, absolutely. And we need to be aware of that.
So I know you're always good with this, but what are the things we should avoid to avoid retaliation claims against us and the company?
Yeah, so let's go back to the definition of retaliation, right? According to the Department of Labor, retaliation occurs when an employer, including through a manager, supervisor, administrator, or other agent, takes an adverse action against an employee because they engage in protected activities. Also, the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity, says this: retaliation occurs when an employer takes a material adverse action because of an applicant or employee asserts rights protected by the EEO laws.
So what are protected activities?
Yeah, so according to the Department of Labor, examples of protected activities include making a complaint to a manager, employer, or the wage and hour division, cooperating with a wage and hour division investigation, requesting payment of wages, refusing to return back wages to the employer, complaints by a third party on behalf of an employee, consulting with the wage and hour division staff, exercising rights or attempting to exercise rights, such as requesting certain types of leave, and testifying at the trial.
Yeah, that is a pretty extensive list. And that's the Department of Labor. I would think, is it the same with the EEOC, or are there different ideas about protected activities?
Yeah, and so it's slightly different. The rules and the policies that made these two agencies are slightly different. The EEOC says an employer cannot punish an applicant or an employee for filing an EEO complaint, serving as a witness, or participating in other way in the EEO matter.
Yeah, so the big difference that I hear is the EEOC says a perceived unlawful practice.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I think that word is so important, right? So when an employer cannot retaliate against an employee, even if the underlying discrimination allegation is unsuccessful or untimely or untrue, if you still retaliation, it's still retaliation.
Yeah. So let me ask again, what can our employers, our listeners do?
Yeah, first, don't do anything that would make one of your employees want to contact a federal agency. I remember you and I, when we were having a podcast, we were having a conversation, you were talking about how important it is to keep these situations in-house. And I don't mean like, don't let them go out there and do that, but making sure that organizations, that the employee has a place to go, which is typically HR, right? Has a place to go to have that before they reach out to the DEO, EEOC, OSHA, NLRB, any of them. So that's the first thing. Second, the employees should be made to voice their concerns in-house and feel like they've been heard, right? So we have to make sure that even if they're unfounded, that they know that they've been heard and we have done our investigation, we've looked at it, and we've done that. And finally, if a government agency does come knocking at your door to do an audit investigation, get legal representation and then listen. Be curious. If you're in the wrong, admit it, pay the fines, and create a strategy not to do it again.
Yeah, that's great advice. You know, I've seen so many of these lawsuits where a company is so set that they were so right and they refuse the mediation or they can't reach an agreement, a mediation, and then ultimately they lose. So really consider the mediation process. And one of the last things I would add is you said, you know, admit it, pay the fines, and is really emphasize that, create a strategy not to do it again.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I think one of the team at HR Stories does really well to help out is we provide companies and organizations with confidential audits so you can be prepared, right? So our listeners can be compared and go, okay, oh, right. It's better to be audited by somebody like us, an HR consultant, than by a government agency and go, oh, yeah, right? And so it's always better to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Also joining our HR Team of One Facebook community helps. Not only do you get advice from, geez, hundreds of, there's thousands on this. There's almost 4,000, but there are definitely several hundred that are very, very active. Other HR professionals who are dealing with similar circumstances, but you also get it, from John and I, because we like to go in and we like to monitor and see what's going on too. So it's fun to see that you're not the only one out there with similar problems.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you feel it, like especially in a department of one, maybe you've never dealt with a pig's head on your desk, right? And so you're not sure, what do I do? One of my employees did this. How do I handle it? And so, but I do think, and we hear, Chuck, right? We hear in our conversations with these individuals, I'm the only one. Bosses aren't listening to me. Employees aren't listening to me. And that's where I think it's really powerful to go to the team of HR1 community Facebook group, reach out to us and have these conversations so you feel, okay, I'm not the only one. Other companies are experiencing that there. And I think we do a good job telling about those experiences on the podcast. Please share our podcast with all your HR friends and family. Next week, we will be answering your questions. So thank you for listening to the HR Stories podcast, where there is a lesson in every story. Thank you for listening to the HR Stories podcast. The material presented in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Chuck and John always recommend using an employment lawyer or HR consultant to handle any legal concerns or HR issues. We do our best to double check sources and make sure the information we are providing is accurate. We may eliminate or embellish without changing the basic narrative to make the story easier to understand. In certain circumstances, we may change identifying information to protect the innocent. The HR Stories broadcast is brought to you by the team at HR Stories. The team at HR Stories is designed to help anyone with HR responsibilities be better at managing the employee experience. To engage with us, go to the HRStoriesTeam.com and learn more about how the team at HR Stories can support your business or nonprofit. Thank you for listening to the HR Stories podcast, where there is a lesson in every story.